C1S. Number 29A.
What we have been doing this weekend in the main is to see those two phases of the divine translation, namely of reducing matter to the human belief mentality, therefore the belief of drugs having intrinsic healing qualities, to see that the intrinsic quality is only belief. And then the second phase of translating or exchanging these beliefs for the divine mind. That first phase we could witness through what has actually evolved since Mrs. Eddy's discovery, namely that actually in medical science there is a great mentalization going on of the drug, that medicine has turned from matter more and more to mind and soul, and that the development which lies in front of us is now the development from human mind into the divine mind. Whereas we have seen or had time to consider, so to say, a slow motion picture of what has happened through 3/4 of a century in medical science, I would like to have now 3 further hours instead of 3/4 of an hour to show that at the same time that second translation has gone on, namely that we can witness historically in the same period that development of how the Christian Science idea has developed in the healing, how the medium of healing has developed from mentality to the one mind. In other words, I would have liked to show you in detail the history of the development of mind cure from the very incipient stages of Christian Science up to the present age. So, as I have only 3/4 of an hour, I just try extemporally to show the main development that has gone on as the healing mind from small m to the healing mind capital M. And perhaps another time or at another occasion I may have the opportunity to go further into this subject, because it is an important subject. You remember that once Mrs. Eddy was asked which Christian Science practitioner they should take, and she said, "I can't advise you and give you a name, but I would take someone who is familiar with the history of Christian Science," indicating that really when one sees the history of an idea, one can much clearer perceive from where we have come from, where we are, and therefore by extrapolating this trend to see where we are going, so that we don't lose our direction. So let me just very shortly and immaturely present the main strain. We can see that in Mrs. Eddy's life, those two strains, namely science and religion, were always in front of her thought as a healing agent. In childhood, she healed herself through prayer from high fever. Then we see her how she investigated homeopathy because allopathy had failed to cure her. And we see her over many years investigating the mentalization of material medicine. Then in between, here and there, we come across an incident where again, through prayer, through holy uplifting faith, she healed here a case or there a case. For instance, round about, if it's correct, it was in 1854, she was presented with a case that the woman brought her child who had a very serious eye trouble. She took the child in her arm and, as she said, lifted up her thought to God and gave the child back healed. It was 56 years before 1910, and Mr. Dawley always associated those 56 years with those 56 rays on that star on Christ and Christmas. It is 56 since 1910 that in 1966 somehow something has changed in the Christian Science field, as well as in the movement, as well as with us. A healing seems to have taken place. There, then we see, going back again to 1954, we see Mrs. Eddy getting worse and worse and finding help then with Dr. Quimby to a certain extent, taking up his theory of healing, having success where Quimby didn't have success, then letting it drop again more or less because she didn't find in it what she was seeking all her life. Namely, that there should be a spiritual principle and not just a mesmeric principle at work in healing. We find then the date 1866 where she was healed and where she said, "I didn't know how I was healed," but she only knew that she was healed and she only knew that it was the Divine Spirit that healed her. So she didn't know at that time the signs of healing. She only knew the evidence of the healing and began to investigate the reason why she was healed. And we see her investigating the Bible in order to find the rules of healing. That was her great point, really, that she was not just grateful and thankful for a healing and said, "Well, that's a special gift from God, and thank God I'm healed." No, she said, "If that is possible once, then it must be possible always. If it is possible once, then there must be underlying it a law and a principle. And I want to find out that law and that principle. Because can I find out that principle and that law, then I can teach it to others, then others can learn it, then others can demonstrate it. Then it will not be restricted to me alone. Then it will be universal." See, it was really a great thought, a great picture that opened up in her mind to do something very different from all those many people who all through the centuries had a miraculous escape, a miraculous healing, or a miraculous incident. This is the uniqueness of her scientific thinking. Here we feel that only with the religious thinking she would have stayed where all the others who had such an experience remained, but her scientific thought and the breaking in of the scientific age enabled her to draw the conclusion and say there must be a convergence of religion and science, that these two cannot be two separate things. So she began to investigate these rules and laws, and we know that the Bible helped her to see the principle and the rules of healing. But the great question which arose was, how can I teach this new science to the students? Because she could see that the healing was based not on thinking, not on mentality, but on spirit, and that it needed a great spiritualization of man to be able to heal the way she had been healed through the influx of spirit and truth. She could not expect that everybody in her vicinity or all her students had reached that spiritualized state of thought. And so she was confronted with a task of which she said she thought she would never be able to accomplish it, namely how to translate that spiritual influx down to that low level of where the ordinary mentality stayed. And she said that she was helped by the very fact that she took a first student and had to try out. It's always the best thing if one is pushed right into the water and say, now you go and swim or you drown. And you can swim. So if that happens to each one of us, that we are once forced into a situation where we think we can't do it, well, we can do it. We just go and do it. So at that point, she had to see, how can I translate spirit to the point of the mentality of the people? And so translated it down to the point of argumentation and taught the students to heal by arguments. You see, it's the squire that came up, not the king. She had the king in her heart, but she had to send first the squire to do the job. And so she began to teach mental healing on the basis of arguing pro-truth and contra-error. And the experience this which she made, you all know from her biography, that these students really couldn't distinguish properly between Christian Science and Quimbyism or mesmerism, that they called themselves mesmerists when they were scientists and the other way around. Little by little she could elevate that thought. She said that until she had to teach it, she never argued herself, but she had to learn it for the sake of the students. This method of arguing and using arguments went on quite a long time, until about 1888, where for the first time in a class which she gave, one of her last classes, she showed the students the synonymous terms and explained the synonymous terms and told them that if they would understand the synonymous terms, they would be able to heal spiritually. But as it is shown afterwards, that naturally they couldn't fully grasp what she meant. So the method of argumentation, which I think you know what it means, was dominating the practice towards the end of the last century. It was more and more sublimated, can you say sublimated, by the higher sense of arguments, namely by a higher sense that God is love and that God translates himself as lovely thoughts. And that tone of gentleness and loving kindness and loving thoughts spread more and more. Until about the turning of the century, a new period really broke in. It was the Kimball period, where she finally has found in Kimball a man who could understand something about what she was teaching. And it is at that time when she changed that paragraph in Christian Healing, where she had said before that she had not found yet a student who would understand her teaching. Kimball began to see something more than just the loveliness of loving thoughts. And he began to see that God is principle, and that principle must be understood through its idea. And he began to teach that principle must be understood through its idea. But he himself must have struggled very hard to understand this himself, because the documents that are still on record show various statements which he made on this subject, and which show that he regarded for a very long time the body as an idea, and that in Mrs. Eddy's handwritings she would correct his statements and said, no, it's not an idea, it's error, showing that at that time, beginning of the century that was, that even at that time, you see, and even in Kimball's mind at that time, it was not yet clear what an idea is. He taught from principle point of view that there is only one principle going on interpreting itself through ideas, and that every material belief would be a counterfeit of ideas, so that every material belief would hint to a spiritual fact and value. Well, this is, in a nutshell, what he was teaching, and the chaotic outcome of this teaching was unspeakable. If I had time, I would show you quite easily and logically what sort of wrong conclusions they had been drawing, and one can draw from such a statement that every material object is hinting to a spiritual idea. Then naturally you come to the point where you think, all right, then if you have a lung, that lung is hinting to a spiritual reality, namely to a spiritual lung. So if you have to heal a case of lung, you have to deal with a spiritual lung. Or you can think that because a material object is the counterfeit of a spiritual reality, there is an idea of lung. So that you treat a lung through the concept that there is a lung idea, or the idea lung or heart. It's that which most of the practitioners 60 years hence today are still doing their treatments. They still have for every organ the idea of that organ. There is the idea of heart, and there is the idea of lung and of kidney, and I don't know what is inside the body. And so you can see that there was quite a disturbance going on, because it could be misinterpreted. And these discussions went on, and Mrs. Eddy stood quiet. It's a quite an interesting period, those last 10 years of Mrs. Eddy's time. The movement was nearly torn into two parts, into Kimballites and anti-Kimballites, just on that very question, what are ideas and what are material organs? And you can see Mrs. Eddy just sitting way back nicely in her home and not saying a word about it. She never interfered with it. All what she did is to encourage Kimball when he came to his home, and to encourage him that his teaching was right, and to support him. But he never openly said, Kimball, the teaching of Kimball is right, until he had passed on. The great question for us today, which still is quite fantastic to think about, is that the whole movement for those 10, 20 and 30 years afterwards were constantly talking about, is there now an idea of heart, or is heart a spiritual idea, or what? Whereas the textbook itself doesn't say a word about it. You can't read in the textbook anywhere that she attributes to an organ either that it is a spiritual organ, or that it is an idea, or anything like that. So you can see how the textbook was for a long time not understood in its essence, just on the ground of this simple question, what is idea? The question of what is idea has not been investigated in Kimball's time. Therefore, everything was rested on the belief of what an idea might be, and everyone could figure out for himself what an idea might be. Well, we know that it broke Kimball's heart, and that for a long time then this antagonism went on between the followers of Kimball and the anti-Kimballites. A new period came in with Bicknell Young, as you know, but when in around about 1915 or so, Kimball Young took up the sentence which Mrs. Eddy put in rather late, "The principle and idea is one." And he began to teach healing from the point of view of oneness. Now we can see that what he brought in was something higher, because actually principle and idea is one. But what does that oneness mean if you don't know the science of it? And so the school of Bicknell Young just remained on the point that all is one. This had naturally the disadvantage that there was no distinction being made between ideas and illusions, that everything was taken as including this one. He went out from the statement that the divine principle of the universe must interpret the universe. But what then is the material universe? And his answer was, quite right, that the material universe is the right universe, the spiritual universe, misunderstood. So that which is regarded as the material universe is really the spiritual universe rightly seen. And this solved for a great extent this discussion which went on with the Kimballites about these various organs and so on, because then he lifted it up to a higher plane of oneness. What was matter? As he told once Mr. Sinton, he said, well, it's just a perishing concept of the imperishable. So that all that is necessary is to reinterpretate the false interpretation. And so a great stress is being laid by the Bicknell Young School on that statement that Christian Science understood translates matter back into spirit. Well, this is all right, and it is something which we still can understand. And on that basis, his healing method was based. He said, whereas in earlier times you had the method of argumentation, namely of a practitioner addressing the thought of the patient in order to correct the thought of the patient so that the patient's thought is put in line with truth and so be healed, or later on by the practitioner correcting his thought about the patient and so helping the patient. Here, in the oneness of being, all this was put aside, quite rightly, because he could see if there is only one being, there is only one mind. And therefore, it's no more a question of the practitioner's mind and of the patient's mind. And therefore there is no necessity for any sort of belief in thought transference from the practitioner to the patient. The one mind is the mind of all, of practitioner and patient and the universe. And so he put a lot of stress that we have the mind of Christ, just as Mr. Dawley would do the same. That consciousness is undivided and universal, that we just have to put, as Mrs. Eddy said, Mary out of the way so as to be one with the divine mind. Therefore, they said healing is nothing else than God being. Being, God being, is healing the sick. One of Bicknell Young's great short sentences was, be, and by being, heal the sick. So you can see he lifted really the method of practice quite higher than the period of argumentation and the period of Kimball, namely to being, one with mind, and that being is the truth about the situation anyway. That there is only one ego, not many egos, and so another point came in very clearly, that which was not seen before, that healing is not a question of improving the mortal. That is not a question of healing a sick and making man whole, but that it is the acknowledgement of man's true being that will heal the sick. Well, Bicknell Young's method, as far as I have shown it up to now, is certainly something which we can subscribe, and I think which is basic also for us. But saying some great truth is not saying the truth, because what is not said is sometimes much more important than what is said. And what Bicknell Young didn't say and left out is of great importance. Namely, what he didn't say is, what are ideas? It's all right to say the principle and idea is one, but if we don't know what ideas are, then we must be honest enough that that sense of oneness is a belief in oneness and not an understanding of oneness. See, it's no use to say principle and idea is one if we don't know what ideas is. Because up to that point, nobody has investigated what ideas are. And the Kimball teaching still lingered on very definitely, that was believing in all sorts of ideas. The idea of table and the idea of a chair, and the idea of heart, and the idea of house, and the idea of this, and the idea of that. So, what he has not answered and didn't answer is, what are ideas? If there is a new interpretation necessary for the universe in order to state aright the material universe, then you must know what the universe is. And if it is a universe of ideas, then we have to know the universe of ideas in its identities. Well, this was not the teaching of Bicknell Young. And so we can see that really that teaching of oneness is a belief in oneness. It's not the science of oneness. And therefore, they don't say it is the science of oneness, but say something very funny, namely that oneness is science. That oneness is science. Now, oneness is not science. That's just not true. Because science is taking the one and showing it in its infinite classification. Science is just that which takes the infinite one and shows it in its infinitude of categories and classification. So, the Bicknell Young school that finds that oneness is science is misinterpreting the term science at all.